And I think the one thing that we have to be really careful of is as the eyes continue to grow, and hopefully as the interest in college baseball continues to grow, that we continue to take a look at our game and figure out what are things that we need to do to increase that growth and not negatively affect the play on the field. What do we need to do to make sure that, that as this game grows, it becomes appealing to more people, not less people?
Boy, Omaha just tortures you. Just like you, I'm not kidding when I say you wake up every morning thinking about getting there, and you go to bed thinking about how you're going to get there.
That's
and
it.
So, you know, Thursday when I get on that plane, it's kind of emotional. You know, like you never take for granted that you're getting to go there. It's that part, I get the chills right now just even thinking about it, talking about it.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
We are broadcasting live from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, and you're dialed back into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, where we connect you with the best baseball minds in our game, all in the spirit of personal growth and development. And man, do we have some audio gold waiting for you on the other end of this call, and we're going to dive into that in just a second. But supporting this podcast are our proud partners and great friends over at AstroTurf, the leaders in the clubhouse for the turf industry. And now these folks have been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years, and they've transformed over 200 facilities around the country, and they want to work with you. So check out more information on their website, astroturf.com. That's astroturf.com. Find out how these folks can help take your facility to brand new levels. Now, with today's show, and in the spirit of the Division I College World Series in Omaha and the official conclusion of all college baseball seasons looming, we wanted to connect with two of the very best guys in our game, ones that are so entrenched in college baseball and would be the perfect choices to give us their take on the state of college baseball. How much better could we have done to lock down Mike Rooney and Kyle Peterson? Both are huge advocates and fans of college baseball. You've seen and heard from both these guys if you plug into ESPN. And they were fired up to jump on this call and talk the game with us, share their insight, their opinions on where we're at, but most importantly, where are we going? And in this show, both Runes and KP open up on the positive trends they see inside our game, how much we're growing exponentially, and the real positives, but also areas for concern that could present. Also, always terrific to hear a nod to our coaches out there, how development on the college level is apparent. Plus, we get their takes on this year's College World Series. We found out all the insider details on hot spots to eat in Omaha. We discuss fully Mike's fascination with tater barrels up in the press box. I mean, this one's packed. Just awesome stuff on this show from two great baseball men, and we're so thankful to lock them down. So just sit back and relax, guys. Enjoy an unfiltered discussion on the current state of college baseball from two of its biggest fans. Mike Rooney and Kyle Peterson join our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast today, and this great interview is coming at you right now. Big time interview coming for you guys today. This one has been circled on my calendar. We have been working behind the scenes to make sure we could solidify this date, this time, to get these two tremendous baseball men on our show. We're talking with Mike Rooney. Mike, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Yes, Chief. Good. Thanks. Appreciate it.
We're excited to have you. And also Kyle Peterson, thanks for being on the call with us.
Hey, amen. You bet.
It's awesome. So we're going to get into this because we got a lot of topics we want to cover. And I think first and foremost, where I want to start this, guys, on behalf of college baseball, but college baseball fans and coaches, we appreciate what both you guys are doing. And obviously your opinions and thoughts on the topics we're going to cover are certainly going to be well received. But, you know, being the ABCA podcast, I think it's great. I got a chance to meet both of you in the past at ABCA, but Kyle got a chance to meet you in person at the show this year. And so if we could, let's start here. And Runes, I want you to kick this off. Talk us through kind of your ABCA experience attending the convention and what you get out of that experience.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the college baseball, number one, has always been about relationships. I just, you know, so many great friends in the game. And that's what the convention is, a chance to reconnect with those guys. And it's just, you know, it's, I feel like I never sleep at the thing. You know, it's just, you're always hanging out with people, and there's so many people to catch up with. But then, you know, I'm still a wannabe coach. So I love the clinics, you know, Jerry Weinstein this year, and
sure.
Steve Springer, and Gary Gilmore. I think that's one of the coolest things too, is the national championship coach gets to kick it off, and mm-hmm. you're in there with your notebook open, like, okay, what's the secret? And there is no secret, just they had a really good team that was really fundamentally sound.
Yep.
So I think, I love learning about the game, and I love getting to reconnect with everybody.
That's awesome. KP, what would you add to that in terms of your ABC experience, especially there at convention?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite thing, honestly, is it's always cool to run into the guys that you think are going to be out there. I love running into the people that you don't expect to see or you haven't seen in a long time.
That's cool.
This year I was standing, I was talking to Gary Gilmore and Bill Olsen and Greg Olsen came walking by. Mm-hmm. And Bill, I see every once in a while in Omaha just because he still lives here and coaches here. Greg, I hadn't seen in a long time. And I would tell you that seems to happen probably a half dozen times every year. It's one of the reasons that I think, we love the game, and in particular the college game. Mm-hmm. because in situations like that, even if you haven't seen somebody in 5-10 years, most of the time it feels like you just saw him yesterday. And I think it gives a great opportunity for that. I'm with Runzo. I think one of the my favorite traditions is the national championship coach and
sure.
and the way that that they're kind of given first billing, which is what it ought to be. But I think it's a great tradition. I think it's a good nod to guys that have accomplished something last year. And, I got to stand and talk to Gary and his wife last year for probably 10 or 15 minutes. And just to hear his excitement about being in that setting and really be the guy I think it's different when you win it in Omaha, you go back to campus and you don't necessarily see all your buddies, and who knows what the recruiting trail is for you as a coach,
sure.
the balance of that year. But you get out to ABC and you get a ring on your finger.
Yeah.
Everybody gets a chance to come up and pat you on the back and congratulate you in person. And I could tell that it was pretty special to Gary just to be in that setting.
Absolutely. That's awesome. I'm glad both of you guys referenced that for us. And I think where we want to kind of start to lay the platform for this talk and just get our listeners all up to speed on where we're at. Each of you kind of walk through your careers in baseball just to give everyone that perspective. KP, kick that off for us. Just talk through kind of your career in baseball and then obviously what's keeping you busy today.
Sure. College ball, played at Stanford. But honestly, the reason that I got out there was a guy named Stan Meek originally. And Stan's been a scouting director for a few different ball clubs, but went down to a camp in Oklahoma City, and the Stanford guys said, listen, if you have an interest, go down and throw for Stan, and if Stan likes you, then we'll continue to talk. And I did, and thankfully Stan had a few good things to say. So went to Stanford's camp, which has got a lot of guys to look in the past, mm-hmm. And ended up signing for 10% to go play for Mark and Dean Stotts, and it was one of the most important decisions I think I've ever made in my life. So mm-hmm. had a chance to get back to Omaha twice, and we were there. We didn't win it. And then on to the Brewers. Up and down with the Brewers for a while, 3 shoulder surgeries later. I can't run and I can't hit, so it was time to figure something else out.
Yep.
Got released in spring training of 2003. Would have released myself. It was absolutely the right move. And had my agent call ESPN on a whim and say, you know what, just wondering if there's any openings. And ESPN was doing Super Regionals for the first time that year. They were on pay-per-view, so nobody was watching. And they let me go out and do Stanford and Long Beach State. And some kid named Jared Weaver was pitching for Long Beach State, and I had no idea what I was doing. I talked way too much. I had a job lined up to trade bonds on the floor in Minneapolis and thought that's what I was going to do. And now 15 years later, they haven't told me to leave yet.
Wow.
So it was really intended to be I was going to go out and do it for 2 days because I always wanted to. And they kind of asked me back, now with the SEC Network and ESPNU and the growth of the game from a television standpoint. And I would tell you, one of the biggest breaks that we had in a weird way was the NHL going on strike in 2005.
Sure. Yep.
Because there was so many windows that were allotted within ESPN for the NHL, and we had to put something on television. And based on the season, it fit great to have college baseball on television. So there was a lot more that hit at that point. Obviously, it predates ESPNU and the SEC Network a fair amount, but I think it laid the groundwork for what would eventually come, and now there's it's amazing the amount that is out there from a television standpoint. So I kind of laugh every day, and I'm sure Runes does the same, to where they sent us a check to talk about college baseball, and that still to this day seems like almost a joke.
It's awesome. Living the dream. Rune, same idea, man. Talk us through your career in baseball. Just catch our listeners up to speed on truly what's keeping you busy, especially today.
It was a walk-on player at Notre Dame. I was so convinced that I was going to make the team that I was simultaneously going to Inter-Hall football practice after walk-on baseball tryout. But it was perfect timing. I was there for Pat Murphy's second through fifth years, and it was an awesome experience. Then I went home to Philly, and I was a high school coach at Malvern Prep. Then I got to go to Arizona State and be the volunteer coach because Murph had gotten that job. And then, you know, John Pulowski gets the head coaching job at College of Charleston. I got to be a paid coach and was there for 6 years. And then I was a head junior college coach at Phoenix College out here. And in that transition between ASU and Phoenix College, Murph had been, kind of encouraging me in broadcasting. He had had me come and host his radio show, and then I'd gotten to do a couple of Fox regional games, and then I was armed and dangerous because then I could start sending those tapes to, to ESPN, which I did relentlessly. Mm-hmm. Probably could have gone to, prison for that, but I just kept sending the tapes to the tape. Finally got to do the classic Delaware State Bethune-Cookman matchup in 2009 that I know you guys both watched.
Sure.
And it was the rest is history. You know, got a real job and kept going with this, and it's like, KP nailed it. It's just, for me, college baseball is in my blood. I want to be involved, and coaching was not the right lifestyle for what was going on for me family wise, and so it was, as much as I missed it, this has been an awesome, do miss it, it's been an awesome way to stay involved and participate in the game. So really blessed.
That's well said, living that absolutely myself as well. And the reason we wanted to kind of get into both you guys on the same show and obviously for this timing of this release right as we kick off Omaha is just to get guys on and talk about the state of college baseball. Now, again, Runes and KP both spend the majority of their time, guys, really focus on Division I baseball. Again, as I serve as college liaison for the small schools, we're going to spend the majority of the time really relative to Division I baseball, the upper level of NCAA, and really talk through the state of college baseball. And where we want to kind of kick this off, and Runes, I want to kind of tee this up for you, is let's dive into maybe the positive trends that are inside the game. What are the areas when you look at college baseball in general that you say, man, we should be really proud of these things?
We've got so many great people in the game. I think the coaching is at the highest level we've ever had. It's a more, the people that have coached in college baseball have always had a heart for it, and it's always kind of inside you, but it's a more viable way to make a living now. So I think we've just got great coaching in the game. I think that, because we were kind of, college baseball is kind of like the walk-on of college sports. So, we've always been buttoned down in areas like APR and being just kind of being fiscally responsible. And so I just think that a lot of the trends that I'm seeing that are positive are some of the things that were there and just continue to grow. And now we get to see them more. They're more public because the sport has grown. But I think that's the biggest thing that jumps out right now is the schools are looking at college baseball because of Vandy and Virginia and Coastal and Stony Brook and Kent State. I think a lot of schools at the Division I level are looking at college baseball as something where, hey, if I want to be relevant in college football, I got to write a $1 billion check. If I want to be relevant in college baseball, it's a $30 million check. So I think that's the neat part is just how many schools are taking it seriously.
That's great. That's well said. KP, anything to add to that? Any meat in the bone for that in terms of what you view as maybe positive trends inside our game we should be aware of?
Yeah, I think Rhodes' point is really dead on, and I would throw TCU into that mix too. I mean, if you go back 15 years ago to look at Vanderbilt and Virginia and TCU and Coastal as – viable postseason consistent ball clubs, you would have got a chuckle everywhere. I mean, at a few of those places, there literally was essentially no baseball history. And it's pretty crazy in what I think in the overall lifespan is a fairly short period of time that those four could reach the level that they have. You get three national champions out of it, and the fourth has now been to Omaha 4 years in a row. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's coaches across this country that would lay in front of a train to go to Omaha once.
Right.
You know, Chalas has done it 4 years in a row.
Yep.
So, I think with that, and I think Mike is dead on with this, is the financial commitment from an athletic department is so vastly different from football or other sports, and yet your return on investment can potentially be so quick that it makes financial sense from an athletic department to allocate some funds toward it. And I think the other is the visibility of the professional game of potentially guys that make it to the big leagues and how that can benefit not only your program, but your school.
Sure.
I think is something else that's really a positive for our game. I don't think it could be understated though, the impact that those programs have had on others committing resources to it around the country,
yes.
Because I think that it allowed ADs and allowed a lot of people to look at our game a little bit differently.
That's well said. And both of you guys make the same point in terms of athletic directors and administration viewing, if we really invest some money into this college baseball thing, it's going to pay its dividends. And certainly to Runes' point, it's not going to be nearly the check that we got to cut on investment into football or basketball. You know, here's a trend, and maybe it's just a cause for awareness, but it could be twisted as a positive. There's now growing expectations. You know, certainly we've seen the arms race of across every conference, not just in the major Power Fives, but they're trying to elevate their facilities. They're trying to invest inside their programs. And with that, as you guys have seen, comes expectations of performance on field. KP, stay on that just a little bit. Is that an area for concern, or is that certainly something we should twist and view as a positive thing?
I think it's both. I think it's absolutely an area for concern because selfishly, I don't know that we want our sport to turn into college basketball or college football.
Right.
I think that there is a safe zone below that, that interest can be high enough and visibility can be high enough, but yet it's not seen as cutthroat as the others. And I'm no expert on basketball or football, so this is more of an outsider looking in view.
Right.
With that, I think that the amount of money and interest that's being put into facilities and coaches' salaries, and because I think that's a component of it too,
mm-hmm.
While it is a positive, it does absolutely create, especially among fan base, an unrealistic set of expectations, I think. And it's not across the board, but it's definitely at certain places. I think we got to be a little bit careful with this facilities arms race, though.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, this is coming from somebody that went to school on the West Coast and just went and spent 4 days at Blair Field, and I loved it.
Sure.
And you go down and talk to Buck in his office underneath Blair Field, and you walk in their clubhouse, and quite honestly, it's got everything you need. Now, could you make it a little bit bigger and shinier? Sure, you could. But I think we got to be careful not to turn college baseball into minor league baseball. I think there's an important distinction between the two. And yes, the money's there, and you know, continuing to invest is a good thing. But you know, spending like drunken sailors all over the place is not necessarily the right way, in my opinion, to continue to grow it. I think you can do it without building Taj Mahals all over the place.
Runes, anything to add to that?
You know, and hopefully this doesn't come off negative, because I think overall we're in a great place. But I think if we could shift some of the investment to the field, to the players, yeah. You know, the mm-hmm. coaches' salaries have escalated enormously, and, you know, the stadiums are incredible. And, you know, those are both awesome things. But, you know, we're still woefully behind in scholarships, and that's something I'd really like to see change. I just,
yeah.
You know, I think that would get us more in line with what Major League Baseball wants to do as far as expanding, you know, not expanding, that's the wrong word, but increasing diversity in the game. And diversity is not just, you know, race or ethnicity, is, you know, social economic
sure.
diversity. So I think, I think the shifting of the investment would be important, and, you know, and I think that's one thing that's a real challenge for you guys, Sheets, that concerns me at times, is the body. You know, when I look at Division I, 300 schools, man, how do you get 300 schools to agree on something? And what
right.
happens is we change gets delayed, where we're not able to proactively look for ways to improve the game. So I guess that's one concern I have, is just the people are so much more invested, and so there's more at stake. And when you're trying to move a, you know, sometimes I worry that for us, or at least for the Division I baseball side, trying to make adjustments in the game is like trying to turn an aircraft carrier. And so that you know, that's the reality of things have gone well, and I guess that would be the perils of growth. It's like you pray for the problem, but those are a couple things that I have my eye on.
That's a great point, and I want to jump on that because I think to really paint the landscape, and I would love to hear your all's further input on this, but to paint the landscape for our listeners, you know, certainly Division I might be as diverse a level as we have in college baseball in terms of what the bottom programs have compared to what the upper programs have. I mean, Division II, again, for the small schools that I mainly focus on, Division II is a lot of public universities. They're all relative, you know, been based on support. They're relatively somewhat the same. Division III, they're all academic for the most part, and there's a little bit of diversity in there. NAI, same type deal. But when you look at Division I, I mean, you've got schools that are all trying to get to Omaha, some with 11.7, some with, you know, some interesting scholarship grants inside their university. At the same time, at the bottom of it, there may be a university that's got one scholarship, but they're all trying to get to Omaha. Could you guys talk about maybe the diversity, paint that picture a little bit? Runes, kick that off a little bit.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, you know. So the thing about Davidson, and I got a chance to interview Dick Cook recently, and he is just wonderful. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, mm-hmm. you know, he's such a bright, thoughtful,
yes.
Person is amazing. But you know, if school X is saying, hey, look, we would like to go to 18 scholarships, and we don't have the funds for 18, we have the funds for 38, but
right.
we'll compromise at 18. Yep. And Dick Cook's at 3, he's at less than 3.
Yes.
And he's like, 18, are you kidding me? Like, I'm not even
right.
I can't even get to double digits.
Sure.
So yeah, and you know, it's we have coaching, we have schools where their head coach makes 3 times what their scholarship bill is for the entire team, and mm-hmm. that coach is probably the most upset about that disparity. So I think we ran into that with the third K coach situation where
right.
you know, it seemed like a no-brainer, create more jobs in college baseball, but I could see for the bottom schools where that creates a competitive disadvantage if they don't even have a second paid coach. So
right.
again, it's just to your point, Chief. It's just the way you said it was perfect, and I never thought of it in those words before. But the you know, I hate to say the top of Division I to the bottom of Division I, but we'll go with it.
Yeah.
Boy, it's a cavern in between there. It's huge, and you know, I don't know. Maybe that isn't the right solution long term. Maybe we need to do what football did and cut Division I in half, or you know, who knows.
There's, sure,
there's a lot of smart people that need to continue to play with all those things, but
yep.
it's difficult to move the ship when people are coming from such different perspectives.
That moment where you said my response was perfect, can I dip that in gold and like hang at my office?
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
You have a credibility issue though. That's
a fact. KP, what would you add to that? I'm interested to hear your thoughts on, especially the diversity just inside Division I baseball.
Here's my, so we got 300 programs, right?
Yeah.
And I think most, not all, but I think most Division I coaches, if you said if we give you the ability to have more scholarships, they would look at that as a positive.
Yeah.
And if you take it one step further, especially that we're right in the middle of draft time right now, and you look at on opening day rosters this year,
yes.
49% of those players, almost 50%, were college drafted kids.
Right.
26, I think, was international free agents. 24% was high school.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, from a business standpoint, and I'm not talking about the absolute top guys, but if you throw everything on a blanket, from a business standpoint, it is better business to draft kids out of college than it is out of high school.
Right.
So working on that assumption, if we said, you know what, we're going to allocate 3 more scholarships across all of collegiate baseball per team,
mm-hmm.
and let's just say that the math works out to it's on average about $30,000. Now, maybe that's light. We can move the number if we need to, but let's
sure.
say it's about $30,000 a grant. That's $9 million of scholarship across the entire board. So it's $27 million to fully fund this thing. If you look to Major League Baseball and say, boys, we need $15 million from you. We need $500,000 from each team, and here's why it makes better business sense for you.
Right.
Because ultimately, and the scholarships to me need to be economic-based. I think that if there's a certain adjusted gross income that it needs to hit, and if you fall within that category, you know what? You're eligible for one of these.
Hmm.
And it's funded by Major League Baseball, and a large reason why it's funded by Major League Baseball, because long-term, I think it helps their business.
Sure does.
So it's a way to fund some of that across the board. And it's also a way that I think we need to bridge this gap between Major League Baseball and college baseball. Mm-hmm. Scott Boras had what I thought was a brilliant draft idea a few years ago. And Scott's point was, let's have two rounds that are high school only. That's it. There's two rounds that are high school only. If you go look at the history of high schoolers, once you get beyond the top 60, your return on investment is abysmal.
Sure.
So you basically handcuff professional teams from themselves, which I think sometimes we have to do from big business, mm-hmm. and say, you know what, this is it. There's two rounds. Everybody gets two high school kids. You pick in the same order we otherwise would. And if high school kids don't go at that point, they have to go to school somewhere, junior college, NAIA school, Division I, whatever.
Yeah.
They have to go to school somewhere else. And wherever they go, then they become subject to whatever those draft rules are at those individual spots. You want to go to junior college for a year, go back into the draft? Great. It's fine. You can absolutely do that. So I don't think it limits kids from an ability to work very much at all. And I also think it protects them a little bit from
sure.
that, you know, that dream that you're sold as a ninth round high school kid, mm-hmm. when in reality your mathematical chances of ever making a living at the game are so minuscule that if you just step back and looked at it from an economic decision, I think most people would say, no, that doesn't make sense. So I would like to see it, and both of those are probably pie in the sky, but I do think there's a legitimate, provable economic argument for both
yeah.
that ultimately enhances college baseball and enhances Major League Baseball. And I would hope that we can get to the point to where the two start thinking as one.
It's a great point. Runes, you sign off on that?
Absolutely. That was way better than my response. I was actually writing down that. That was awesome.
That was good. It was really good. And it makes total
APN
sense.
And Scott Boras, those are two smart people.
Yeah.
I stole it, but I gave him credit for it.
Yes,
I want to make sure. He was.
Yes,
it was copyright Scott Boras.
Well, you brought up this point, and KP, you made this earlier, and I think we need to jump on it because I think anytime, obviously as a coaches association, but certainly what you guys do for college baseball, any chance we can to give a nod, a tip of the cap to our college coaches, talk about the development level that you've seen, the level of coaching, the level of really enhancing these players by their benefit of coming and playing college baseball. Runes, if you could kick that off, what's been your glance in at just watching how the level of coaching has improved over the last even few years?
Well, I think it's just like all walks of life, information flow has improved. So there's, sure. you know, people are so, you're so much more in the know on what's working for other people, you know, that through ABCA and technology. And I think that part's huge. I think the other part that's really cool is how complete the coaching is for so many of these programs. And I think about KP brought up TCU. Mm-hmm. I mean, and these schools have to sit down with families and say, hey, here's why we think this is a better option than professional baseball for you right now. And this is not criticizing professional baseball, but for your ages 19 through 21, this is why we think we've got a better setup for your development. And TCU's got a nutritionalist. They've got the mental game of baseball covered. They've got the fitness, the strength and conditioning piece, you know, they've got the baseball side. You got Bill Mosiello, who was a manager in professional baseball. You got Kirk Sarlous, who pitched in the big leagues. And I'm just using them as one example of many. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the area that, I can't speak for KP, but I know when I was in college, it was kind of like, hey, weight workouts are at 6:30 a.m. and nobody took attendance and, you know, whatever it is, what it is.
Sure.
You know, it's just now everything is so buttoned down and there's just not one stone left unturned where quite honestly, I think it's hard for professional baseball to compete with that, where these top programs, and I think it's trickling all the way through Division I, the development experience is just completely dialed in.
There's no doubt. Well, I mean, if you do the math, if you study the numbers, you know, and again, KP referenced the opening day roster numbers, and it's hard to argue 50%. But when you really dive into it, to limit your time in minor league baseball, you should spend time in college baseball. Instead of worrying about riding a bus at 18 years old and trying to work your way up from, you know, the Gulf Coast League, jump into college baseball and develop and grow. And then after 3 years, jump in and you've almost, you know, cut that minor league time. Instead of spending it on a bus, you spend it sometimes on a jet getting across the country. But, KP, what would you add to that?
I mean, just look at this year's draft.
Sure.
I mean, go look at Brendan McKay and Kyle Wright, mm-hmm. and Paven Smith and Adam Haseley and Keston Hira and go look and see where they were drafted 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I don't know what the number is off the top of my head, but it's going to be north of $25 million that just those kids are going to sign for. Go look at the development that Brent Rooker had from last year to this year.
Sure.
And how much money that made Rooker. And, you know, does he get into professional baseball and have that same development? Maybe. And I want to be clear, like, this is not a knock on coaching in professional baseball.
Not at all.
At all.
Right.
Because there's some incredible coaching in the professional ranks. And it's not one is better than the other. I think what it is if in any business you are given an opportunity to make a decision on something, given 3 more years of data and the ability of someone to go live on their own, or 1 year if it's a junior college standpoint, but given more data, and part of that data is life data. Like, forget baseball, but how are you going to operate when you get out on your own?
Yeah.
You're going to be better at making that decision. So it's not a knock on the pro guys to say, well, you know, college baseball does a much better job of developing guys than minor league baseball. No, I don't know that that's always the right case. I mean, if you're Mike Trout, does Mike Trout need to go spend 3 years in college? No, probably not. But there's not that many Mike Trouts in the world.
Sure.
And I think the other thing that we found, which is great, is so many of the college coaches are there because they like the environment of college and they like to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, that teaching brings about development. And we've seen it. I mean, it's, you know, you can't argue with the numbers of guys and the amount of time that it takes them to get to the big leagues when it comes out of college as opposed to high school, which
right.
is only fair. It's only right.
Yeah, like makes sense.
You know, they've got to face the highest level of talent in the country for the previous 3 years, so you should be a little bit closer.
Right. Yeah, it is. It's a self-serving argument, but it is one that certainly should be considered. Quality of life, I think, is something that certainly a lot of college coaches are selling.
By the way, like, let's not forget the fact that you're 3/4 of your way towards a college degree.
Exactly.
I mean, I think sometimes that's what gets overlooked in this whole thing is it's baseball, and development. Okay, great. But the reality is some of them are going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them aren't good enough. Like, I don't care where you sign. Sometimes you're just not good enough. And that's the way life works sometimes. Like, at the end, I wasn't good enough. But you know what? I had 1 quarter left to go back and finish up school.
Sure.
And I think that it, from a kind of a utopian standpoint, like, it makes our world better.
Mm-hmm.
If these kids have a chance to go to school for 3 or 4 years, because it's a hell of a lot easier to go back and finish a semester or two than it is at 24,
right.
potentially married with a kid or two, to say, well, Major League Baseball said they'd pay for my schooling, so I'm going to go back to freshman orientation.
Yeah,
it's just not as easy from a life standpoint.
Runes is still trying to graduate from freshman orientation.
That's all right. They kicked me out, too.
Yeah.
That's right.
Brought this up earlier, and I think this is such a great, from your all's perspective, especially you're so intertwined with ESPN, and you've watched the growth of college baseball. Again, most of us have watched it from a fan's perspective. You guys have been entrenched in it. You referenced the 05 lockout and how that changed things. And Runes, let me let you kick this one off. Talk us through just how much coverage, exposure, how all that has changed for college baseball, and certainly it's been for the better.
I mean, I think coaches say they're more well-behaved in the dugout because they're worried that they're on camera.
That's about right.
That's part one. You know, I have a tough time putting a perspective on that because I just, you know, I think we all are. We're fans of college baseball. We love it. I can't get enough of it. So more is clearly better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other thing is I'm just, you know, I'm proud of college baseball. You know, I think the coaches and the kids are what we want. And KP's point is a great one. So many of them are not going to be in the big leagues making their living there. And, you know, as proud as I am to say that I got to coach an Andre Ethier or a Dustin Pedroia, I think of other guys, you know, Mark Sopko, Carlos Arguello, names that nobody knows that are doing amazing in their career and they've got families and, you know, those are the things. So I guess, you know, the exposure piece is I'm pumped up about it because I'm proud of college baseball. It's not perfect and people aren't perfect. There's no question. But I think we do it right. I think the kids are held accountable and they're taught things that will help all of us. You know, they can take leadership roles in society. And so I think it's cool because of that, because it isn't, you know, that they're just not all major leaguers. And I think that's actually awesome.
KP, what would you add to that? Again, you talked about jumping in there in 2003 and really getting entrenched inside what ESPN's doing. But if you could talk about the growth and exposure that you've seen, how it's changed over the last, you know, 15 years.
I think by and large, it's very positive. But I think with any exposure comes, you know, maybe a little bit more awareness of warts if they exist. And I think the one thing that we have to be really careful of is as the eyes continue to grow, and hopefully as the interest in college baseball continues to grow, that we continue to take a look at our game and figure out what are things that we need to do to increase that growth and not negatively affect the play on the field. And I think, to me, one of the biggest ones of those right now is pace of play.
Yeah.
We run the risk of, at a time where we have every outlet available to us to continue to grow this game, but the reality is if your games are taking 3.5 hours, that's just not the way the world works.
Yep.
And we cannot be, we can't turn the eye and the response can't be, well, you know, it's baseball. That's the way it's always been. Well, life isn't the way it's always been, no matter what it is.
Sure.
Like if you want the way it's always been, then throw your cell phone in the river. Like that's not the way that we work. And so I think that we do have to push that, and we need to figure out ways that we can speed this game up and, you know, in a normal game, keep it to where there's no reason why that baseball game should go longer than 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And this takes some coaches changing some of the way that they do some things.
Yeah.
And it forces some coaches to take their hands off the wheel a little bit. I think that's a positive for a lot of these kids. So, yes, I think exposure is great. I think it's brought our game to a lot more people. And honestly, it's so much easier for them to absorb it. And that's ultimately a good thing. But I think with that, we need to continue to look at it and say, okay, with that change, what do we need to do to make sure that as this game grows, it becomes appealing to more people, not less people.
Let's talk about this. Let's get into Omaha and let's really dive into what's going on there. Because obviously, KP, growing up there, Runes, you've spent so many years there covering the World Series, both you guys. Let's talk about Omaha a little bit. And if I could, KP, talk about just maybe your favorite memory or moment that when you just step back away from your experience there is still so vivid even today.
My favorite personal memory is pitching against Clemson my freshman year, and that outstretches the experience that I had 2 years later when I gave up a significant number of home runs and the outcome was a little bit different. So
gotcha.
I'll go with the one that I won because that one is a little bit more enjoyable.
Sure.
You know, and the weird thing for me was I had been, because obviously it was still at Rosenblatt then, I had been on that same field a year before in the state tournament and got beat and didn't throw well. And then fast forward what was like a year and a month from there, and here we are playing Clemson in an elimination game. And I'll never forget, Shane Monahan was a leadoff hitter for Clemson that year, and we had some film and some scouting reports, but not a ton. And our scouting report on Monahan was he swings at the first pitch of the game. If you throw a fastball that's a gutter ball fastball, Monahan might hit it in the seats, and it's 1-0, and, you know, you throw one pitch. And rarely did I think in a significant amount of time did I think about the first pitch of a baseball game.
Sure.
Like usually it's a two-seam fastball on the outside part of the plate, you throw it and off we go.
Yep.
So we threw Monahan a first pitch changeup to start a game, and I've never done it before, and I don't think I've ever done it since. And A.J. Hinch was catching, and Monahan swung right over the top of it, and I'll never forget, he spun around and looked at Hinch like, what in the hell did you guys just do? And there was this, for me, there was this sense of confidence that immediately came from that. Like, okay, it worked. And I kind of tricked myself into the next 9 innings of it working. But I've never had a more influential first pitch of the game, besides maybe when I gave up a first pitch home run to Adam Kennedy in a regional one time. That one did spin me for a loop. But it just, that whole game, I mean, I could still take you through Gary Burnham hitting it into the seats and a double play ball to end it when Troy Kent made the play at first base and comes in with a smile on his face and hands me the ball. And I don't know. That day is a day that even if I end up losing my mind at some point in my life, which I probably will, I have a feeling that I'll still remember that day in pretty good detail.
That's awesome. Mike, what would you add? Is there a personal memory, something from Omaha that just really just sticks out to you even today?
Yeah, I would say one I was there for and one I wasn't there for. But, you know, it's like KP saying, just the personal ones. So in 2005, I had just left ASU, and man, we had gone 0 for our last six. Could not break through to Omaha. And part of that was us, and part of that wasn't us. It was just we kept playing Fullerton, and they were just on an incredible roll. And so in 05, ASU finally breaks through, and Jeff Larish hit three home runs in that game at Nebraska. So that is a memory for me for life, because Nebraska being in Omaha was, you know, it felt like Rosenblatt held 300,000 people in that sure. day. And, you know, just knowing what that kid had been through, where, you know, he's redshirting his freshman year, then Murph pulls him out of the stands in street clothes in the middle of the game to come hit. And then his sophomore year is a first-team All-American. His junior year, he's not even honorable mention all Pac-12. And then comes back for his senior year and does that. And that was one. And then the 09 College World Series really stands out for me. I got to be there as a radio guy. Hmm. And there was 33 big leaguers in that College World Series. You know, ASU had Mike Leake and Cole Calhoun and Jason Kipnis and Josh Spence. And North Carolina had Dustin Ackley, and Matt Harvey was like their Sunday guy.
Sure.
You know, Texas had Brandon. I mean, it was just on and on. But Cole Calhoun hit a slash double. He was slashing, fake bunt swing, and hit a ball off the wall against Texas. Just I remember that College World Series. The games were amazing. I think a lot of that had to do with the caliber of kids that were in that College World Series.
Sure. Well, you know, we're sitting here talking before we got recording. We're all doing last minute laundry, packing bags. We're all getting ready to head up and fly out to Omaha. And I'm just interested in Runes, if you could, what are you most looking forward to, Mike, when you get to Omaha, building inside of you? What are you most looking forward to encountering once you get off the plane?
Oh gosh. I'm most looking forward to getting on the plane, to be honest. Being there is amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I learned this in coaching. Boy, Omaha just tortures you. Just like you, I'm not kidding when I say you wake up every morning thinking about getting there, and you go to bed thinking about how you're going to get there.
That's
and it. So, you know, Thursday when I get on that plane, it's kind of emotional. You know, like you never take for granted that you're getting to go there. It's mm-hmm. that part, I get the chills right now just even thinking about it, talking about it. And, you know, and then it almost is like the ABCA convention for me, where you're going to see a million people, and
sure.
there's just an incredible, the city of Omaha has a credible
yep.
spirit to it. And so again, for me, this sounds super corny or weird, but getting on the plane and knowing I take screenshots of my boarding pass on my phone, because I'm like, okay, am I really going?
Yeah, you know, this
really
is happening.
Cool.
That's cool. Well, KP, when you land, I'm sure they're throwing rose petals, and there's the carpet out there for a coming home moment for Kyle Peterson. But what are you most looking forward to this week as we get out to Omaha?
I'm so spoiled because I live here. I mean, it's just when I get home from Supers,
yeah,
is like this deep breath from the season. And I think there's a little bit of a deep breath at home, but I'm not sure. Because I got a 20-minute commute.
Yeah.
And it's I get to now see this tournament through my 12-year-old son's eyes, which I remember looking at this tournament through my 12-year-old eyes. Mm-hmm. And getting to see him bounce around the ballpark for 2 weeks and go to practices on Thursday. That's the part I love the event immensely. Mm-hmm. And especially this year, I think that the brand power that we have in Omaha this year is
sure.
I can't go year by year in my mind. I'm not nearly as good as Runes at doing that, but I don't remember one to where we had eight brands
yep.
that are national, you know, not necessarily blue blood for the last 50 years, but for the last 15 or 20 in our sport.
Yep.
We got some really good programs here this year.
That's a fun
and I think that it, you know, it's good to have a Cinderella component to this thing, or those that really have built their program up. But it's also kind of nice to have the dudes show up.
Yeah.
And I think this year is going to be pretty monumental because of that. Friday is always one of my favorite days, because when kids walk into that stadium for the first time, you know, it's just like the, you know, whatever it is in all of our lives that we've envisioned for a significant period of time. And when you experience it the first time, it's a pretty honest set of emotions. Yeah. And I love when kids walk into that ballpark for the first time. Now, I also like seeing them when they think they hit a ball on the screws in batting practice and the guy catches it 15 feet from the wall, because there's a few looks that go, oh, hold on. Like, that ball's supposed to go in the seat.
Right.
But that Friday is one of my favorite days every year, just to see kids, and not just kids. I mean, coaches sometimes, or parents, or administrators, or trainers, or whoever it is, that have been working towards what sometimes seems a mythical goal for whatever period of time it is, and that's the first chance that they get to walk on that field.
Well, you know, last year was my first opportunity. As you're telling that story, I'm reflecting back. Last year was my first chance to get to Omaha live in person, and I'm reflecting on old Rosenblatt and watching old Wichita State teams and old, you know, Ron Frazier teams come up through, and a chance to sit there, like you mentioned, on Friday night, see the opening ceremony. I'm not going to lie, if I said the chills came up, and I won't on air say that maybe there was a tear that I had to fight back, but it was a really cool moment to take that in personally.
Yeah.
That certainly I'm looking forward to getting back. And I feel like I got my sea legs underneath me this year. You know, Rune's screenshots of his ticket. I was taking screenshots of, like, you know, hot dogs and, you know, my Omaha cup, and I'm going to take this back with me. But I'm certainly looking forward to getting back. And I think, you know, KP, this is a great person to start this question off, and then we'll get into the food expert himself, Mike Rooney. But if you could, what's some of the stuff that if a fan, or especially myself, maybe this is for my own notes, best food inside the stadium or best food around town? Where should we go?
I'm not that good inside the stadium.
Okay. That's where Rune steps
but
in.
I can get you outside of it.
All right.
So you got to go to the Drover at some point, and you got to have what I think is the best steak that I've ever had.
Okay.
And it's got an old school, you know, salad bar with a sneeze guard feel to it. But the get something that's a whiskey steak, whatever it is, pick your favorite. But I think you got to get there once. I would encourage you to go to Le Sole Mio on 31st Avenue in Oak. Mm-hmm. It's a short drive from downtown. Mm-hmm. I've known Donna Marie forever. Their son Dion and I went to high school together. Don did a spaghetti feed for us when we were in high school to try to raise money for our Legion team. I think that you better go hungry, because you're not going to leave hungry. I mean, they just pile
right.
food on. And so I think you got to go there. You know, around downtown, I would tell you the food at the Blatt, and I think it gets overlooked just because it's so close to the ballpark, but the food at the Blatt is really, really good. Mm. And you can walk across the street, and I don't know how often they serve food. I mean, they sell so much dang beer for for 12 days. They're probably not worried about the food nearly as much.
Sure.
But I think that's one that you got to get. And if you want to go get breakfast, go check out Louis M's Burger Lust on 14th and Vinton.
Ooh, okay.
And it's not far. It's just south of downtown. It'll take you probably 6-7 minutes to get down there. But Louis M's is always safe for kind of a greasy breakfast.
I am taking feverish notes. Now, for the end stadium review, let's take it down on the field to Mike Rooney. Mike, take us around the stadium at TD Ameritrade.
Yeah.
Where should we go?
I would say I'm with KP. You know, I'm trying to think of what I had in the stadium. And it's so funny. I have this reputation as a foodie. I'm really not. I just eat a lot of cheesesteaks.
There you go.
So I think
that's why we love you, though.
Characterized. Yeah. But I would say in the press box, we had a fun thing last year. And this, it just kind of encapsulates the spirit of Omaha, I think, where they served tater tots in the press box, and they referred to them as tater barrels. And we had a huge argument that continues. Mike Lanana of Baseball America is kind of he's like my evil superhero adversary, where he's on Team Fries. I'm on Team Tater Barrels, personally.
There you go.
But I don't know how you could not love tater tots. But
sure.
I would tell you, it's the thing about Omaha, it's kind of like half state fair, half going to a game at Wrigley Field. It, you know, it doesn't matter what you're eating and drinking. It's
sure.
It makes me smile just talking about it. Just everybody's in a festive mood, and it's just I tell people all the time, if you love sports, you got to get there. And it doesn't matter if you're doing it as a guy's trip or a father son trip or just a family trip. If you get all that out there, it's amazing. It's in the city of Omaha. You know, KP could speak this better than me, but it's almost like the city shuts down. It's all about the College World Series for at least that week. And it's just awesome. I think it's a must do for everyone that loves sports.
That's outstanding. And this is the last question I got for you guys, and certainly have been more than thankful for your time, your insight, your information, the laughs, the great insights you guys have offered. But let's talk relative to, specifically to, this College World Series. And KP made a great point. There is certainly some brand name recognition that's within this tournament. So, Mike, if you're looking at this, again, I'm not going to pigeonhole you to a pick, but what may be some of the matchups you're looking forward to? What are some of the stories that obviously jump off the page to you there as we look at the field?
Well, I just think you have to adjust your focus when you start thinking about the CWS, because pitching depth isn't as big of a deal because you have the baked-in days off. And, you know, we don't know what the weather conditions will be. Will the ball be moving? Will the ball, you know, what are the keys there? Teams like TCU and Florida that have a lot of CWS experience on their roster, I think that's a big deal because it is so unique. It's something that can overwhelm your team because it's a different routine. And I mean overwhelm them in a good way. It's a cool thing, but you're treated like a big leaguer, and that's a lot to take in.
Yep.
So those teams with the recent experience really catch my eye. And I had Oregon State and Corvallis this weekend, and I would just tell you, their offense was incredible.
Yeah.
I couldn't even believe how there's not one bad at bat in their lineup, and there's like one opening in your defense, and next thing you know, they've put up three runs. And it's not by the home run necessarily, but their offensive production, it was so lightning fast in the way they did it. That was really interesting to me. But I think KP's point is the one.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we've got some big time college baseball programs out there.
Yeah, fired up. KP, what would you add to that? Again, not looking for a pick, just certainly what are the stories that jump off to you, but what are you really looking forward to seeing or connecting with?
I always like, we have so much kind of draft discussion before we get into Omaha, and now that the draft has already happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to see Brendan McKay on the mound after he's been taken, whatever it was, fourth overall or fifth overall. And you get to see a kid like Drew Ellis that, you know, coming into this season, I don't think Drew Ellis was all that high in anybody's list. And then the helium just kind of kept going and going and going. And he hits three home runs in a super regional last week. And here's his name called on the first day of the draft.
There it is.
I think those are, we've seen in recent past, and, you know, Roone's talk about the year where there was 33 guys that played in the big leagues. You know, it's just a few years ago that we had the Benintendi, Bregman, Dansby, Carson Fulmer. Yeah, I think we're going to look back on that one and throw Walker Buehler's name right near the top of that list too before it's all said and done, because he's tearing up minor league baseball this year. I love when we get to this point, because ultimately what we're seeing is a combination of a few different things. One, guys that are going to get a chance to play this game for a long time, that are going to become household names at the major league level. And two, guys that are really good college baseball players that may not play this game much after this tournament is over, and they may get a chance to go somewhere else and play for a short period of time. But the reality is they're good college baseball players that ultimately are a major reason why their team came and had the run that they did. I go back to a kid like Tyler Campbell a few years ago for Vanderbilt, who gets thrown into a situation because Vanderbilt has a kid that gets suspended. Campbell hasn't played that much during the course of the year, and ends up being a massive reason why Vanderbilt made the run that they did.
Sure.
Like, those things are some of my favorite things. We don't know who those names are yet, and we never do. Mm-hmm. But I can promise you that when we get through this thing in 2 weeks, there's going to be a few more names that we didn't necessarily think were going to be at the top of the list that end up a major reason why somebody won a national championship. And it doesn't matter that those kids, you know, from that point, might not have an incredible baseball career moving forward, but who the hell cares?
Yeah.
I mean, if the stories that come out of this thing from unlikely areas are it's one of my favorite things every year, and it's almost a lock that it's going to happen.
Oh, that's awesome. Boys, I cannot thank you enough again for your time, just the insight that you've offered on this one. Again, if you need me, I'll be there, and I might be in line crushing a burger or something like that, but just come grab me. I'll do anything I can for you. But, man, be safe, and obviously, KP, it's easy to drive. Runes, be safe traveling. I hope to catch up with you guys when we get out there. And, again, thanks for jumping on our calls from the Clubhouse Podcast, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun.
Thanks, Sheet.
Sheet. just awesome. I mean, you wind those two guys up, and then you just sit back and let them roll. Huge thanks to Mike Rooney and Kyle Peterson for joining our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast and offering their takes on the current state of college baseball. These guys both are in the trenches. They've dedicated their lives to covering college baseball, but more importantly, they're supporting, they're promoting our game. And on behalf of all of us out there, thank you, Runes and KP. We appreciate each of you for what you're doing for the game, its coaches, and its players. Thanks again for joining our show. We wish you guys the best of luck in the offseason. You've got my number. Call me if you need to kill some time before next season. It just seems so far away. But again, thanks for joining our show. And another huge thanks to our great friends over at AstroTurf. Again, the leaders in the clubhouse, guys, for the turf industry. Their support of our Calls in the Clubhouse podcast is so appreciated. So if you want more information, give those folks a call. Start by going to their website, astroturf.com. That's astroturf.com. Find out why they have been ahead of the curve for almost 50 years. And remember, guys, this podcast is for you. We love that you make these fit your schedules any and everywhere you can. So here's the rundown on how you stay up to speed on every one of our shows. Number one, go to iTunes, Google Play, hit subscribe. Make sure that show shows up on your phone every Tuesday. We put a brand new one out. Number two, go to our website, abca.org. If you're interested in seeing all the shows, go to the education tab at the top. Calls from the Clubhouse podcast link will be right there waiting for you. Scroll through those and check them out. And number three, give us a follow on Twitter at ABCA1945. You'll see the release of our show on those Tuesdays. We'll pull the best quotes from those throughout the week. And again, we want to make sure you're staying ahead of the game with our podcast. So looking ahead to this coming Monday, June 26th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we want you to plug into your Twitter and let's all connect on our next hashtag ABCA chat. And this is where coaches from all over the world check in to engage and network. Guys are connecting and engaging with one another. And the whole time we're sharing coaching information and insight. You're challenging what you're teaching and what you're doing. It's just been a powerful platform for our coaches. We're growing the game, but we're growing our coaches. We're developing those guys. And it's only for an hour. It's not a huge time commitment. Jump on there. Check us out. It's an awesome time. Monday, June 26th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, our next hashtag ABCA chat on Twitter. And we hope to see you check in with us. Again, make sure you're following us on Twitter. That's important, at ABCA1945. Membership information, messages from our sponsors, coaching articles, and insight. We want to make sure you're on there with us. You can find me as well at CoachSheets3. Or you can reach me directly by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at abca.org. It's so great to hear from you guys through Twitter or by email. Keep those coming. Tag us in your tweets. Let us know how these shows are hitting each of you on the other end of the line. Also, we want to make sure you know about our ABCA Barnstormers Clinics Tour as we approach the fall with plans to hit 20 different cities across the Midwest and the Carolinas. Now, these are one-day coaching clinics. We give our coaches in attendance 7 coaching clinics in one day from the area's best clinicians. We try to do on-field demos, teaching segments. We use our coaches in these segments. And again, we try to work across every fundamental that we can cover in one day. You will become a better coach. Trust me. Come see us at the ballpark. Check out our website, abca.org/clinics. For more information on our upcoming Barnstormers Clinics Tour this fall. And lastly, this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association and the over 8,000 coaches worldwide that we represent. We hope if you're listening to the show, you're part of our coaching fraternity here. But if not, head over to abca.org, check out the extensive list of membership benefits, look to join. It's only $45. Learn about all the great things we're doing for our game, but also our coaches. And as always, we wrap up the show, guys. Thank you all for listening in. We appreciate you staying dialed in to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And until next week, we ask that you keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging your why in this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.